I have two more arguments left, but I would like to warn you at once. All the previous arguments illustrated the uniqueness of the truth that Christianity proclaimed to the world. And these two arguments that I would like to talk to you about today are of a different kind. They are not directly connected with the argumentation that we studied, but they speak of reasonableness and justification of the religious worldview compared to the other worldviews. So they are connected with Christianity indirectly, because they justify the religious worldview as such. So what is it all about? It is about two points, two ideas connected with the philosophy and the science. How are they interconnected? So you realize that there was an epoch that remains in the conscience of many people up to now as the epoch of contraposing of religion and science and religion and philosophy. For a very long time, philosophy has been regarding itself, I mean, many philosophers think so, as the queen that opens the light of truthfulness to a person, which shows the way of life to a person, but the religion is regarded as an illusion of reasonability. I think you came across this point and you know of it. So I would like to discuss it and to illustrate now what philosophy is all about and how religion is interconnected with this sphere of knowledge. I think it would come in very useful when you are going to meet people and to negotiate. So what is the main question of the philosophy from the very beginning? Of course, the main question which moved people forward is the search of truth. But what is truth? You must remember Pilate's question that Christ didn't even answer. To some extent, you are already familiar with the philosophical thought of the ancient Greece, so there's nothing new about it to you. What did this question come to for Miletus, Anaximander, Anaxagoras, Heraclitus, Pythagoras? Do you remember what they were looking for? Thinking about the truth, they were looking for the essence of being. And it seems right. Where else can the truth be? And so they found it. Someone believed it to be water. Someone believed it to be air or fire or a figure and so on. So they believed they found the essence of being which determines everything that exists and where the key to understanding being is hidden and consequently the understanding of the main problem of a human life, which is the sense of life? That was a philosophical question. What does history tell us about? What kind of philosophical search was it? I'm sorry for using some philosophical terms, but you're familiar with them. You might have noticed that I'm trying not to use any foreign words or terminology, but in this particular case, it is impossible to do without them. So, what kind of search was it? It was the search of ontology. Ontology means being or essence in Greek. The philosophers claimed something, so they didn't prove it, but they claimed it. For instance, that the essence of all existing things is water. Water evaporates and turns into air. When it freezes, it turns into the same matter as everything else. So it was the state of the human soul, but they claimed something. For instance, Pythagoras claimed that the measure of everything is a number. By this, he showed that everything is an amazing harmony of being. He even called the world harmony cosmos, which is beauty. So a number is beauty and reasonability, which is beautiful. It is not just some impassionate reason, it is beauty. So we've discussed it enough. So the first period of the philosophical search was of the ontological character, when something was being claimed, but it was impossible to prove it. And when we see all these different opinions, like water, fire, number, and so on, very soon there appeared skepticism. Do you remember the sophists and their famous aphorisms? So the philosophical thought came to absolute skepticism and despair. So there is no possibility to prefer one opinion over another. Why? Because it seems that everyone has their own logic, but the foundation of this logic is very doubtful. So next we see that philosophy rejects this ontology, and gradually, due to sophists to some extent, and further on, we see the medieval ages, then the European thought, philosophy gradually goes by the way of proving. So it is striving to prove that something is like this and not like that. So philosophy turns to the rational way, and ratio becomes the main tool, because first there was dogma and next there was ratio. And what's curious, that's something that we should pay our attention to. So, how was the question put? When we say essence, what is it? It was obvious to all people that essence and being is not this changeable world, when it's sunny today and it's raining tomorrow. So everything is changing and everything is moving. Heraclitus said that you cannot enter the same river twice because it is flowing. So the question was, what is essence? What are we talking about? And it turned out to be a very complicated question. So there were so many variations of answers to it. And very soon everyone understood that it's impossible to speak about essence if we don't say, because we have to say, we must prove. Consequently, we must make sure that our thinking is capable to adequately, correctly comprehend the things I'm talking about, the things I'm thinking about. So what is the criterion of truthfulness of my thinking? What is the criterion of truthfulness of my thinking? Where can I find it? I can find it in itself. So congratulations. So my thinking is the criterion of truthfulness of my thinking. So, but is my thinking correct or not? So this is a vicious circle. Poor philosophers, so they get captured in such a trap they couldn't even think of. How can I prove truthfulness and correctness of my thinking by means of my thinking? So I'm right because I'm right. As Luther said, I insist on that and I cannot do otherwise. That's it. This may come in handy to you. So he responded like this when he had no arguments against something. He said, on that I insist and I cannot do otherwise. Just like that. So that's how philosophy got trapped. So you remember what happened. It came even to rejecting the objectivity of this world and to the fact that the fact of getting to know the world is very subjective. And there was Hegel's developing idea, so he built a whole system. And 30 years later, another German philosopher, Trendelenburg, refuted this system, and he proved that the ideas which Hegel believed to be in contradiction had already existed, and he just put them in the right places, but nothing more than that. So, is my point clear? The first period ended in skepticism because you can't claim anything you wish. And the second period, which Descartes put in the following way, I think, therefore I exist. So what does it mean I think, and what does it mean I exist? So it was an attempt, and it turned out that the second period got captured into such a vicious circle that philosophers couldn't even think of. What should we do? And in the 20th century, the philosophers gave up all of it. They realized it's all impossible, and they all rushed somewhere else. There comes the philosophy of culture, or the cultural philosophy. What is the point of it? They started searching not for the essence of being, not at all, and not the truth. You can call it truth if you wish, but where did they go looking for it? They started to study the cultural and historical sphere and layer of life. So they studied culture and hoped to find the truth there. Do you understand what it's about when one historical period comes after another and one culture comes after another, and now you have to combine the incompatible things, mix it all, and what is the result of it? Cultural philosophy turned out to be a psychological science which studies the layers of culture, and that's it. And it has nothing to do with the essence of being. It is simply just culture. It is interesting, but it is a disappointment. And then something new comes to the surface. There comes the existential philosophy or existentialism. In Russian, we call it the philosophy of existence, but it doesn't sound good enough. But existentialism, that's different. You just say this word and everyone is impressed at once. So here, instead of essence of being, they started to talk about existence of a personality. And while the cultural philosophy studied the outer world, existentialism studied the inner world of a personality. But indeed, they went away from the search of the truth, and the term, the truth, actually disappeared. So there are two forms of existentialism, religious and non-religious, but in essence, existentialism is not religious at all. Sartre, the French philosopher, said, existentialism is nothing but the logical conclusion from atheism. And even if there was God, that wouldn't matter at all. We are not interested in that. So he's a real philosopher who's looking for the truth. He reached the point of absurdity. But of course, there was religious existentialism. It was called religious, but there was no use from that religiosity. So that was the short summary of philosophy, because you have already studied it more detailedly and you can illustrate it with great examples. But I have a secret intention. Where is the truth? What is the path of the truth? I just claim something, but you can say anything. So when I'm trying to prove something, it makes everybody laugh. Why? Even if my logic is correct, but the foundation that I'm developing my logic from is empty and wrong. Why? What grounds did Hegel have to claim that the idea was developing gradually? It seems that his logic is right, but the foundation of it was empty. So it's very important. The human thought came to an abyss, and it failed to find and prove the truth by means of our rational researches. And here, in the ashes of philosophy, comes a new idea. which, unfortunately, saw no development later on. It is the idea of Алексей Степанович Хомяков and Иван Васильевич Киреевский. These are the fathers of Slavophilism. These are people of incredible mind, let alone their other qualities. They had a colossal erudition, and they moved forward the idea which, of course, as it seems, can only be the only one. It was a very simple idea. In all the preceding philosophical systems, there was no foundation. Don't deceive yourselves. Absolutely correct and irreproachable logic does not yet lead to the truth if the basis from which our reasoning proceeds is incorrect. You can't turn a fly into an elephant, despite all possible logic. So what did they claim? They say, we must admit, that there is someone who we can call reason, love, and the truth. Хомяков called him the willing reason. We must admit and study God. And this is not the conclusion from all the historical life experience, because there was not a single atheistic people ever found. You know, in the 19th and 20th century, there were great attempts to find such a people, but everywhere there are some religious ideas, and we should realize that the existence of this willing reason is confirmed not only by history, but also by amazing personal experience of the great number of people. His existence is confirmed by the study of the external world. There is a teleological argument. So there are grounds for recognition of the willing reason. Unlike all the arguments that there were in the history of philosophy, and if we take this as the foundation of our conclusions, and consequently, we will be able to decide why this willing reason is the truth, and what the sense of the human life is, because here we can find both the truth and the sense, let alone other things. And they claim that on this foundation we can build a reasonable and a well-grounded system of thought. It is a philosophical system. This was their conclusion. What is philosophy? It is the building of a worldview. as any system is. What can we see in history? Every philosopher claims a different thing. Each philosopher is trying to provide a worldview for a person, but these worldviews are absolutely different, and they failed both ontologically and rationally. How is Christianity different? Because Slavophiles paid attention to Christianity, and they said that only with the recognition of God as the truth, which has great grounds for recognition, only here we can build a reasonable system of thought, which will justify both our search for truth and the search of sense of life. Christianity gives a person a worldview which gives answers to the main questions of a human life, but it only answers these questions if we recognize God's existence as the truth. Because if we do not recognize it, if we don't have this final and ultimate foundation, then the whole history of the philosophy has shown us what happens. Everything falls apart. There are these pathetic disputes without any foundation. If we regard Christianity from the standpoint of the search for truth and of justification of our convictions, then Christianity gives us the affirmation of being as God. So it's not just some relative being or the first element which everything else is created of, but Christianity claims that being is a personality, and Christianity opens us that God is a Trinity. So, first, it opens us the existence of God, which can be verified by any person, as it is the fact, whether we like it or not, because we should study this issue reasonably. Christianity is a very together worldview. And what does it give it in our life? Let's take the famous thoughts by Pascal. So these are the sketches that he left us without forming a system. He had a goal, which was to write such a work that would make all the atheists and skeptics stop talking forever. And one of his very interesting conclusions was the following. He says, if we recognize that there is God, the Christian God, then the person who recognizes it doesn't lose anything. This God doesn't take anything away from him. He doesn't take away any joys of life, not joys of the drug culture, but he doesn't take away any real joys. Furthermore, he gives a person the peace of mind, the peace of conscience, the firm life convictions, and if there is God, then the gates of the dignified eternity are opened to such a person. But if there is no God, what would a person lose if they live according to the law of conscience that Christianity demands? A person loses nothing, but a non-believer loses everything there in another world, if there is God. So this is a very famous parley, because a believer wins everything both here and there, and a non-believer, if he doesn't live according to conscience, well, he loses quite a lot here, and he loses everything there. Isn't it interesting? So, of course, Pascal spoke according to the psychology of the time. So the Christian worldview as such is justified not only from the philosophical point of view, but also from the practical point of view of our life. Indeed, sometimes they say, you believe in some mysteries, God's providence, so it's nonsense, is it? Okay. Well, I believe that something bad happened to me, and that's this is the act of God's love to me, because God is a doctor, and doctors have to operate and have to cure me. It's not very pleasant, but I know it is for my good. But if there is no God, then what happened to you, and what is happening to you? Are these all some random accidents, some evil people, and you are constantly afraid of some accidents? Well, it's terrible. I mean, even from the psychological point of view, just imagine how much Christianity gives to a person who is firm in their conviction that not a single hair falls down of my head without God's will, and God is love. So here, in this life, a person acquires such great good, and a non-believer turns out to be a toy of random circumstances and evil people and haters, and they are constantly trembling because anything can happen, a disease or anything. So you see what a great advantage Christianity gives us in this life. Father Agathon said, even if the sky falls on my head, my soul will not shudder. Of course, only Father Agathon can say that, because he achieved that, but every believer must always remember this, especially when something happens and we are suffering. So this is the advantage of the Christian worldview. So, my dear friends, I wanted to have a short conversation about all of this. Of course, I didn't mention that Christianity enters the main questions of different directions, those of ontology and epistemology, which are two main directions of philosophy, and the Christian answers are very reasonable. And from the psychological point of view, this gives vital forces to people, and these answers are very optimistic. Can you imagine that we believe that God is love and not a single hair falls down from my head without God's will? So we shouldn't forget about this. So when I give you a D or a C, you should be happy and thankful to me. Why? Because I'm a tool of God's providence, and it means that it is very useful to you. Don't you forget. That's one more issue that I'd like to discuss with you today, and it is, of course, science. People attributed such a halo of greatness to science, with which nothing can compete. And especially there's this pathetic argument that science is opposed to religion. It is such nonsense, but in order to realize that it is nonsense, we should go into detail. So religion, from the standpoint of the scientific methods, is a real science itself. In the direct meaning of this word, religion is science. What theory in science can be regarded as a truthful theory, or at least a theory that is worthwhile? What theory can be called a scientific one? There are criteria in science. They are objective, and two of them are the most essential ones. The first one,
по которому мы можем говорить о том, что данное утверждение или утверждение
gives us a right to say that this particular affirmation deserves attention, is that this theory has facts which confirm it. Secondly, there is a verification principle, because there must be a possibility to verify this affirmation. It is essential that not just someone says, here is a fact, but there must be a way to verify the truthfulness of this fact, and this experiment can be carried out repeatedly, one time, two times, three times, and then it's clear that this is a scientific fact. So then this theory can be regarded as the scientific one. So these are the basics of science. But I must remind you that science is founded on the postulates which cannot be proved. So, after all, science is founded on faith. Do you remember any of these postulates? Yes, yes, you're right. This is the conviction that the objective world exists, that it's not a fiction. For instance, Berkeley, the English philosopher, claimed the opposite. He said that what we regard as the objective world is just our image of the world, but it is not the objective reality. And secondly, there's the postulate that this world is cognizable and that our thinking is capable of comprehending it correctly. And that's the paradox. So this objective world, does it really exist? It seems so. But the physics claims the opposite. Why? Do you like tasty food? But what you feel are just the chemical reactions on your tongue. And everything sweet and sour and bitter and so on are not objective things, but are just the chemical reactions on your tongue. Do you see multicolored nature? But it's ridiculous. These are just waves of different length which affect your sight nerves. Do you enjoy music? But a physicist would laugh at you because these are just waves of different length, and you think it's music. So do colors exist? A physicist says no. So do sounds exist? No. Are there objectively cold or hot things? No. So, what is the connection of the wave fluctuations which affect my hearing and the great music of the best composers? Nothing. So, this is a temptation. Let's not talk about this. That's the temptation. So, if scientists didn't recognize the objective existence of this world and the objective existence of the laws, and if there wasn't faith in cognizance of this world, then science would stop its existence. But it is only possible to believe in that because, unfortunately, it is impossible to know it. So it is called a postulate, which is something that we accept because we are unable to prove it. So science accepts some things without proofs, and it builds everything on these postulates. So why there's such a great problem with religion that also postulates God's existence? And they ask, did you see God? And the response is, did you see your mind? Does it mean that you don't have a mind? When they're trying to prove that there is no God because they didn't see him, you should ask, did you see your mind? So, consequently, so that's the best answer. So, it turns out that science is based on postulates of objective existence of the world, but physics claims the opposite. Science believes in cognizance of the world. It seems right, so the laws are being opened. According to these laws, the technical thought is developing. But do you know what is curious? If indeed all this knowledge was of the objective kind, and if knowledge corresponded to the initial truth, then our technological and scientific progress wouldn't have come to the crisis which we are facing today. If the progress resulted in the ecological, moral, and so on crisis, it means that we made some mistake. So we do not understand things right. Why am I talking about this? It is important to correlate religion as the worldview with science. I'd like to say of religion as of science as such. It turns out that religion also postulates God's existence in the same way as science postulates the existence of objective world. Religion also says that there is a way of cognition of God, and Christianity claims this is eternal life, that they may know you, the only true God, and Jesus Christ whom you have sent. Secondly, Christianity has an innumerable amount of facts which confirm both God's existence, let alone, you remember we spoke of the prophetic argument and the argument of miracles, but it also confirms the truthfulness of Christianity as such. There is an innumerable amount of facts, and this is what every scientific theory needs. And can we verify it? Can we conduct an experiment repeatedly? So this is the question, and the answer is that throughout the whole history of Christianity there has been the experiment conducted which proves and confirms the truthfulness of Christianity. Throughout the whole history, people have been conducting this experiment, and there have been not just sincere believers. That's a different matter. No, but there have been people whom we call the great saints, and who claimed directly who God is, not just His existence, but that His love, that He is the greatest good, that He is the Spirit, and when the human spirit unites with God's Spirit, that's the greatest good.
Ну помните Серафима Саровского, пожалуйста, 19 век.
So one after another, in different epochs, people of different cultures and so on came to the same conclusion. So this is the experiment. For example, Nikon Belyaev in the 20th century, Серафим of Саров in the 19th century, George the Recluse in the 18th century, and so on and so forth, one after another. It's not just us, but they spoke of their state. That's the scientific experiment, and all the great saints confirmed the words of Saint Apostle Paul, who repeated the words of the prophet. eye has not seen, no ear has heard, nor have entered into the heart of man the things which God has prepared for those who love Him. So Christianity responds to all the demands of science. That's why Holy Fathers called ascetics, the science of the spiritual life, to be the science of all sciences. Why? Because this science gives a person the main things. It gives life to people. Because there are many sciences which don't give us much. They are out there in the outside world, but this science deals with my essence. It opens truth to me, and it is confirmed by experiments of the innumerable amount of people.